You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Manchester United overcome an emotional day, the passing of Sir Bobby Charlton to find inspiration to beat Sheffield United 2-1. Chelsea squander a two-goal lead at home to Arsenal to draw 2-2 in a tense and tight affair between Pochettino and Mikel Arteta's two sides. Liverpool grabbed two late goals courtesy of Mo Salah to defeat Everton 2-0 in a controversial Merseyside derby, and Man City avoid a potential scare with a 2-1 win against Brighton but lose a key defensive figure for next week's Manchester derby. All and more in today's episode.
Well, mate, we've got to start this weekend with the very sad news that broke on Saturday morning, the passing of Sir Bobby Charlton, who I think sometimes the word legend is bandied around in football, but certainly fits the bill when you're talking about one of the greats of not only English football, but world football, Rob. And I think the outpouring of emotion, of respect that people have talked about, everybody's got either a Sir Bobby story, a Sir Bobby photo, a Sir Bobby instance that they recall. And simply, Rob, for me, he was the most humblest superstar footballer I've ever met. I had the chance to be in his company a number of times. A lovely guy, always calls you by your name, always looks you in the eye as if there's nobody else in the room. There's always somebody of knowledge who wants to encourage you to go on. And just a beautiful man as well as a magnificent footballer. It's a huge loss to football. And I think you just have to see the emotions and the minutes of applause or that was over this weekend that were done impeccably by everybody in the stadium. That's how, with such high regard, he's held in football around the world.
Yeah, well, Rob, and I think even the game today that we just watched at Villa Park, you know, singing his name, you know, is that sort of player that people around the country, because of his legendary status of what he did as a footballer, coming through the Manchester United Youth Academy, Rob, and playing, I got the numbers here, 758 games, you know, for Manchester United, scoring 249 goals. The England numbers are good, and kept scoring 49 goals. He was a midfield player. So I think, you know, when you said earlier, Rob, about everybody has their kind of thoughts, my thoughts and memories to footage that, you know, we don't see very often of the olden days of Bobby Charlton going through midfield and smashing a ball into the roof of the net from 25 yards. That's, you know, the images that I have of him. And I think you're right. I think there's certain figures that, and that's why our show, our NBC broadcast was dominated at the start of it when the news came out, and even today, because this is a big name, you know, a big name England World Cup winner in 1966. I think it's just Jeff Hurst now, Rob, that team really is still with us. But Bobby Charlton, yeah, it's one of those huge, huge names, giant really of English football in our generation, Rob, and growing up. To today, of course, like he still probably isn't the biggest name in English football in our lifetime for what he's done at a huge club and with a national team of England. The greatest English footballer, Rob, in our lifetime.
Absolutely, Rob. I think without question. I think you could go, you know, we travel around the world. You go to a cafe, you sit in a taxi, you talk English football. First thing people say is Bobby Charlton. It's like he's a recognition of what English football has become. And in a time, Rob, where social media and followers and likes and people trying to build brands, he had a brand before anybody was even thinking of talking about it. Sir Bobby Robson. You know, you used to see him, Rob, didn't you? He could hit it as hard with his left foot as he could with his right. I don't know if he's right-footed or left-footed. Scored such brilliant goals, was so empathetic to his team, you know, would give, apparently, you know, in the final against West Germany, he marked Franz Beckenbauer rather than got forward and got goals. He was so giving to the team. And it's such a loss to not only to Manchester United in English football, but world football. And I saw a brilliant line that Pelé once said that, you know, he could shoot in Manchester and he'd score in Rio de Janeiro. That's how good he was. And, you know, two legends paying a little bit of credit to each other. So, yeah, you know, sad day. It's going to be, you know, there's a couple of games coming up this week in Europe and then the Manchester Derby next week, Rob. We'll see how Manchester United handle those very, which are going to be very raw and very emotional when one of the true greats has left us.
Just last thing for me, Rob. It's interesting we had Manchester United legendary Phil Neville on our broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, I think everything that is Manchester United, if you know what I mean, the way that they go about things, obviously under Sir Alex Ferguson, it was continued superbly well. I think goes back to him. And Phil Neville said that, the way he carried himself and the stats. I just, you know, we'll see how the club go from now, Rob. You know, that's such a big, giant icon of the club and of English football gone now. See how the club move forward. I'm sure they're going to do the right thing over the next few weeks when there's games at Old Trafford. But yeah, a legendary person that's saddled on now. And our thoughts, of course, with his wife, Lady Norma, and his daughters and grandchildren who survive him. So, it was a big day yesterday. And I think we had to start the podcast with, you know, paying our respects as well. Let's move on to their game, Rob. Manchester United away from home. Sheffield United, of course, knowing of that loss at that point. Maybe extra motivation in their performance. They did get the victory that I'm sure, of course, they all wanted and the fans wanted. 2-1 win, Rob. Dallow's, you know, it was a Bobby Charlton-like goal from distance into the top corner to win Manchester United 2-1. Wasn't always a brilliant game of football. Manchester United still, for me, Rob, are still, actually like a couple of other sides, and not the only, like, still, they're a distance off what they can do, what they did last year. And they're still trying to find a rhythm, Rob. They're still struggling to dominate and to be a team that we saw for large periods last year under Erik ten Hag. They still can't seem to find their real strong, powerful rhythm.
Yeah. It's interesting you say rhythm, because I think last week, or before, I call them the lack of a bit of an untidy team. You know, when you see neat football and nice build-up, United aren't that team. And as I was watching them this weekend, I almost felt like, you know that mate, or you could be that guy, actually. You know, you see somebody on a dance floor and they're not quite dancing to the beat. The beat's going one way and their feet are going the other. I'm just saying, if it feels like you, then you can raise your hand, but I wouldn't put that on you, mate. I've seen you drop a few moves. But it's almost like, they haven't quite got the rhythm of the beat yet. Like, there's bits that start to work, and then there's other bits that, you lose trying to time in and you go off kilt a little bit, and then it comes back. And do you know, it was really funny, Rob, because I was watching the game, and at times I've been critical of Bruno Fernandes. At times I've been, you know, I've praised him, because I think he, at times, I feel, is almost playing at a bit of another level to some of his teammates. I get sometimes the sense, and I'm feeling sometimes his frustration that people aren't getting. He's got the rhythm. He's the guy who understands it, who feels the dance. And I get sometimes around him, some of the players haven't got that. And I think it's starting to, almost he's got to, like, big deep breath, come on, I'm captain of Manchester United, I'll go get us through this. But I almost feel as though he's thinking, like, come on, guys, we should be a bit better than this now. We should be, you know, starting to knit this thing together. We've seen players go in. We'll talk about Unai Emery, the last game we've seen this weekend, what he's done at that football club in less than 12 months. You know, we've seen Roberto De Zerbi, you know, we've seen people go in and have an influence on their football club. Mm. And for some reason, Manchester United still seem a little bit off where I think they should be right now, Rob.
I agree, Rob. And it's, you know, I've I've rarely criticised Bruno, actually, and I know he's not perfect, but he's just one of my favourites in the league. He's just one of my favourites. Yeah. And I watch him kind of play in different spots, and he's played on the right-hand side. He's played as a number 10. In the game, for the majority, he was a left-sided number 8. He does McTominay and Bruno allowed to get forward, and McTominay scores, of course, the first goal after 29 minutes, a little bit against a run of play. So Bruno, but I hear you. I mean, Rasmus Højlund is settling in. So he's somebody, Rob, that I think is the fans have to be excited about. Like, you know, just his early movements. And I like what I see from him. Rashford is still struggling a little bit with confidence and with impact. Antony is fading away for me, Rob. And I've never really been sure at the start. I wanted to give him time to see if he could be a consistent, effective performer and producer. We've seen him a few times come inside, of course, and score goals on left foot, rolling inside and bending it in there, but not enough consistency for me. One of my notes is Garnacho's better than Antony. Garnacho is better than Antony. And I know Garnacho's still young and he's raw, but I just think he really, really good off the bench, you know, but he won a start games. I just think Antony not doing enough. And when there's so many players, Rob, that we feel down a little bit. I mean, Amrabat's okay in there, you know, Lindelof playing at left. And it's shaken up a little bit in terms of their injuries. But they're just not. Period in the first half, Rob, I'm thinking this looks like a mid-table team, Manchester United. And, you know, they're a little better than that in the league table. And second half, they were better. Second half is more what you would expect. Dominant. You know, when we watch Man United, Rob, of time, you expect to see certain things. You expect to see control, dominance, ability, talent, joined up kind of combination play and stuff. And like you said earlier, they've been clunky and they got the job done. They won the game, Rob, and maybe now that they can kick forward into some run of form because, you know, gosh, you know, a club like this and the money that's been spent, and I know that there's some ownership thing, Rob. I don't know if you want to get into what Jim Ratcliffe, if he's allowed to buy 25% of the shares, might do. There's talk about, which interests me, right? Jim Ratcliffe, there's talk of, that he could get control of the football side of things, Rob. Wouldn't that be that would surely be a step in the right direction?
It could be, Rob. I got to say, I'm not totally sure what that means and what that in terms of, so what, the Glazers still own 75% of the business, but are letting you run it, you know, letting you make decisions,
the recruitment side of it,
players,
well,
recruitment. Although I hear, is it Joel Glazer, one of the Glazers, is going to be on the football committee that's going to have a say in those things. So how much
they got for money.
You would think that. So I got to be honest, Rob, as things with Manchester United and certainly just putting the Manchester United sale in its own little bag, I'm not quite sure what that means. I think it's one of those we'd have to wait and see. But listen, it's a change and hopefully it's a change for the better. It's a change that can, I think, build a better relationship with the manager, that he can start to feel that he's running this club and the club's all united behind him and they can go forward. But, it's... as ever, nothing's ever quite easy with Manchester United and this whole takeover in the Jim Ratcliffe. Now the other offer has fell away. I'm not as confident sounding as you are that it's going to be all roses and we'll move forward and everybody marches on together. I still think that Glazer influence is going to be sort of a shadow over the club. One player, Rob, and I'm going to go to my underappreciated player of the week, who some would say has been under a bit of a shadow for most of this season and part of last season. And I'm going to go to a certain guy, centre-back, Harry Maguire, my friend, who made only his second Premier League start of the season, started last time out against Brentford in a win there. Going back to Sheffield, where I think the phrase up there is a bit muck and nettles contrast, like we're going to get stuck in and it's not going to be great football. And Manchester United, you know, the great Manchester United are turning up at Bramall Lane. And I just thought that his performance, his influence, his experience, I think his mental strength, having come through and still going through some difficult times where everything he does is under the spotlight. Everything he does comes under criticism. I thought he did a really nice interview with our desk into the show after the game, where he did say, you know, it's been tough mentally. I think Tim asked him a really good question in terms of how's he prepared himself, and he said it's been difficult, but he's a professional. His managers talked about, you know, that was more of what they're looking for. His numbers were good, Rob. His blocks, his clearances, his security felt better. And I just think for a guy who's been maligned, who's been, well, bullied on social media and put down in such a way, for him to continue to turn up, Rob, continue to take the stick, life can't be that great at the moment, and sort of look to work his way back into the football team. I just thought Harry Maguire deserves a mention as my underappreciated player of the week, because there's still a decent centre-back in there, and if it's not going to be at Manchester United, it will be somewhere else. But he's sort of shown that there's a bit of fight in there as well. You know, we've seen the Jadon Sancho thing where he's almost like damn tools and not playing. Mm-hmm. This guy's continued to get put his kit on every week, sit on the bench if he needs to, come on and played in an important victory. Helped, you know, assist, I think, last time out against Brentford. Thought he was man of the match performance yesterday. So yeah, in a tough time, Harry Maguire shown a little bit of the metal and fight that might just get him back into at least contention of playing for United again.
Yeah, I mean, they need him. I mean, there's so many injuries back there, and I agree with a lot of that, Rob. And I think his answer to Tim on the show was, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's tough. It's been tough. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine what it must be like in his head to get the criticism that he gets so much, whether he's at United or of course, Gareth Southgate continues to trust him at the international level. I think it's a good shout, Rob. It's a good shout. I mean, unappreciated, I mean, he certainly isn't with Gareth Southgate, with England. We know that the manager absolutely appreciates and respects what he's done. The record with him in the England side, I think, is very, very good. And I think you're right. I mean, it must be tough, Rob, to go out there for a club the size of Man United, knowing that if you make him, it's only a few weeks ago. Did he score an own goal? I can remember now. It's like, you know, you reached out and it went in.
Yeah,
it's like,
with his foot, everybody jumped on it, didn't they? Yeah.
So good shout. Good shout. He did play well back there with Johnny Evans. I mean, it's remarkable, really, those incredible two, you know. The former Leicester guys back there for Manchester United, but he had a good game, and I think it's a good shout to give his character a mention, Rob. What a good character he's got.
Yeah.
Just being able to get on there and play well, given. And by the way, you have a few games like that, Rob. You have a few games like that, and the fans, not just us, but the Man United fans will respect that as well.
Yeah.
And he will.
He can turn this around, can't he? Fair play. You know, McTominay is probably another one who's in that similar vein. He's now becoming, as you said last week, I think an important player for them, Rob. Scott McTominay, getting goals, making things happen.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, let's move it on, Robbio. Let's move it on. The next game on our little list, and big game. Arsenal derby.
Big derby.
Chelsea 2. Chelsea 2, Arsenal 2. Goals from Cole Palmer. From the penalty spot, of course, it was Mikhailo Mudryk with the mishit cross that went over the top of the goalkeeper.
Declan Which Rice he said he meant, apparently. He said he meant.
Oh, did he say it?
Do me a favour, Mudryk, please.
Brilliant. And then Leandro Trossard scores in the 84th minute, I think it was, to make it 2-2. There's some words on Chelsea, Rob, because I particularly first half, like they're really starting to come together, and you can see the confidence, the energy they've got, the fans are behind them from a terrible start and a terrible few months, really, when you go back to last season, the form that they've been in for a long period of time now. He's starting to find, I feel, consistency with the lineup. I really like Cole Palmer. It was a decision to play him as a false nine, Rob, with Conor Gallagher close to him. And Nicholas Jackson was on the bench, came into the game later on. Sterling's looked sharp down the right-hand side. Mudrick's with the more games. You know, with things that are happening, I did a little analysis of him a couple of weeks ago, Rob, in our studio, and he actually is involved in quite a lot of the good stuff that Chelsea done over the weeks. So I think they're starting to look a bit more of an identity about this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I sort of wrote a couple of things as the game was going on, and as you say, Arsenal didn't play particularly well in the first half, but I think that would also be taking a bit of credit away from Chelsea. Mm. As I was watching Chelsea, at 77 minutes, Rob, everything's going to plan. Sanchez makes an error, Rice takes a good goal, and all of a sudden they're back in it. But if that had finished differently, I think that's almost why. Oh, that's what Poch is doing. I can totally see where he's at. And my sort of takeaway was, I thought that was a glimpse into the future of what Chelsea could look like. But it was also a realisation of actually where Chelsea are right now. Some lack of experience, some poor decisions allowed a team, a decent team, back into the game, which they should have won and seen out. But there was I felt that Chelsea will be disappointed, obviously, to be 2-0 up with 30 minutes to go and end up drawing 2-2. But there's a lot of good things they can take out of that game. I think there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of decent players who've shown up, Rob. They played Liverpool, they played Arsenal at Stamford Bridge. We were at the Liverpool game, first game of the season. I didn't think I thought they played reasonably well that day, you know, to get a draw. And I thought, similarly, take out the two late goals that obviously has hurt them. But I think Pochettino and that young group of players can take almost like a bit of a step forward in terms. I thought Cucurella was excellent for them, Rob, at left back, a player who has been a bit maligned and people were talking about him going out the door. I think Conor Gallagher's growing as a Chelsea player. I think his influence, his maturity is being pulled. Cole Palmer's been a great little find for them. Good business at a time when, you know, they've had injuries. So I think there's a lot of, you know, Raheem Sterling's form's picked up and he looks really involved and lively again. So I think there's a lot of good things starting to happen at Chelsea. And, you know, I don't think they should just focus on that last 30 minutes when, you know, Arsenal came back into the game and maybe could have nicked it later on. That you know, Pochettino, that's what Poch is about. That's what this group is about. Given time, they can start to put some 90-minute performance together that will hopefully see them over the line.
Yeah, there's still really good players to come into this team, Rob, that will make them better. I really think that a back is for them. They started in a different way, didn't they, Chelsea? And they're lacking numbers in attacking areas.
Yeah.
By going to a back four, it's literally more people in advanced positions for them. Of course, you've got Ben Chilwell to come back at left back. I agree, Cucurella did really, really well, but Ben Chilwell is better as a left back. Reece James is close. Right, and I just think the midfield triangle, if you put it that way, with Enzo, Caicedo and Conor Gallagher is kind of interesting, Rob. It's kind of interesting, and I hope the manager sticks with it because, you know, in some ways you might say, is there a star kind of creator in there? Yeah. I'm not sure. And by the way, recently, you know, and I think I'm right in saying this, it's been Caicedo next to Enzo Fernandez. Remember that little period of time, Rob, when Enzo was playing as a 10 almost?
Yeah,
and
I'm higher like, up, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I like where he is now next to Caicedo, and I like where Conor Gallagher is. Gallagher just needs to start scoring, you know, just to get a couple in, one of his backside to score a goal, to get, because I think he could be a regular scorer, Rob. And I just, when you look at other midfields, I'm thinking about the Liverpool midfield of 4 or 5 years ago, and you've got the energy. There's youthful energy. Mm-hmm. There's defensive power in Caicedo. There's the scoring potential of Gallagher, the creativity of Enzo. I kind of like the combination of qualities in that midfield three. And again, I just reiterate, really hope that those three stay and get used to each other, because I think that's what you're starting to see now is players being used to playing with each other. The centre-forward thing is still, and maybe when Nkunku comes back, Rob, it will change a little bit. That's still, you know, but Cole Palmer's ability to play as a nine, He could play on the left-hand side. If Mudrik has a quiet period, rolling inside. I'm starting to enjoy Chelsea, and I love it when you can see patterns start to happen, and that's what we're seeing. Just a couple of talking points, Rob.
Yeah.
So the penalty for handball on and William Saliba.
Oh, Saliba. Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
I
think we'll be seeing this on the now famous Howard Webb VAR show with Michael Owen, and I think Howard will be giving us an explanation as to why it's given and how it's given and that. But listen, I don't like it, Rob. I didn't like it. I didn't like that in the action of trying to defend and go for a header. The ball hits his arm from, it's got to be 2 yards away from the header in distance, and that's deemed as a penalty. I mean, it just feels like it's wrong to me, but this offside, we're basically in the position, Rob. Remember when we used to, I think it was last season or something, we were doing Champions League games, and we basically said, you know what, if it hits the hand or arm now in the box, it's a penalty. Let's just go down that route. Because it leaves it a lot easier and we don't all get ourselves wound up by it. I almost feel it's getting like that in the Premier League now.
I can't feel so strongly about this one, Rob, again. And what's annoying, right, is when I hear by the letter of the law.
Mm.
By the letter of the law, it wasn't a penalty because the way it's written now, and it got changed in the last couple of years, is pretty simple. We said this before. I think I said this in the last couple of podcasts.
Yeah.
It's either got to be a deliberate hand to ball, like you move and you know. Yeah. I thought we saw one of them as well, by the way. Somebody got away at the weekend. Just, or, you know, was it other arms in the position you'd expect in that specific play? And William Saliba is desperately trying to reach forward, and the arms naturally come out. Now, if maybe the officials haven't played football a lot or at a high level, don't understand that players always need leverage, then that's a problem because that's the law. The law is, do you think that his arms were kind of normal for that action? And I thought they're exactly normal. I did post on social media, Rob, a video because we had good angles.
Yeah.
Mikalic Mudrik, who heads the ball.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing.
His arms are in the same position. The two arms are in exactly the same position. So if it's okay for the attacker, but it's not okay for the defender, or I mean, can't wait for the Howard Webb show so Howard can give us the little loophole they've got somewhere where there'll be a reason that he can justify that it actually is a penalty.
They'll think it's I wouldn't be able to watch it because you know if you can't realize what's natural for a footballer. Basically, they're asking now players
jump defend without your hand
to
up,
play
you've
in
got
a natural
you
way.
Put your hands down, which means you can't get any leverage, which means you can't jump for the ball, which means you do that two or three times, you'll be sitting on the subs bench. Your manager going, "What you're doing?"
Yeah, and also by the way, Rob, final one on this. Players' arms being up is also to protect the heads, you know. Rob, we've got to jump. We're going to bang heads because like arms are up to act as buffers.
Yeah.
These things are they're buffers, and the other player does it, you stop the heads banging. So, that was a big decision in the game, Rob. Goalkeepers.
I'm glad you've gone there because I've got G Case Big Circle. No, so I don't know if we're going down the similar route, but I thought. Well, let's talk about goalkeepers. Raya. And Goal Frost. Like, has had some good moments. Has had a couple of not-so-good moments, including one at the weekend. I thought, for the first time, Rob looked a little nervy. Like, it started to get to him a little bit. And I was thinking about goalkeepers, because, Robert Sanchez at the other end, and you know, we're talking about an ex-Brighton goalkeeper and an ex-Brentford goalkeeper now playing in at another level, really, at bigger clubs where the intensity is right. More so, you know, with Raya and the Ramsdale thing and how that's all played out, and you know, Raya then tries to get one off his feet that I think it's Cole Palmer who intercepts, and if he scores, we're talking about something very different. There's absolutely no doubt, and I believe some Arsenal fans were shouting for Ramsdale, which is it adds another layer to it. People are going to question, is it the right decision? Does he stay in? When do they swap him in and out? But it's also, Rob, it made me think about when you sign for a Premier League club at any level, it's, you know, there's a gamble. You go in, you've got to prove yourself. But like as an outfield player, I always used to think, you know, we were centre midfield players. I always used to think, if the game's not starting well or you're a bit off it, I can go and find the game. I can go and run around and block a fullback and go and win a header. I can do a couple of things that can get me into the game again and get me back in a level thing. Oh, I'm good again now. Right, I'll get back to my game. As a goalkeeper, you make an error or something goes in, a goal goes in that you should have done better with, or you misplay a ball out and it gets blocked and you know it could have gone in the back of the net. You have to basically stand there and wait for the next incident to come to you.
Yeah.
So you can't run your nerves off. You can't influence a game by, you know, come flying out your goal and tackle somebody. You have to almost be patient and have a certain personality. It's going to be interesting to see how Raya handles the next couple of games, especially if something goes wrong.
Okay. Let me say it this way. I'm going to be a bit quicker, Rob. Robert Sanchez is not up to the level of Chelsea. Not up to that level. He was questioned at Brighton. He wasn't even the first choice, I think, at the end. He lost his place a little bit. He has made several errors. Now, when we watched so many of these games, it's like, oh, that was a bit awkward. Okay, you know. And then another, oh, yeah, that was a bit of a mistake. It's got too many now where I'm thinking, oh, this is awkward. Mendy wasn't the answer. Kepa wasn't the answer. Robert Sanchez was a kind of a left field recruitment decision when there were so many players. And I don't think he's good enough as a goalkeeper for the club where it wants to go to. That's the first point. David Raya, Rob. If everything that Mikel Arteta said is we to believe it, it should be out the side now. Should have, like, we've had a couple of circumstances. You've tried to play the ball out again. You gave it straight to the opponents that didn't score in that situation. You can question, you know, whether the starting position was a little bit, he was passing
the post on that near post. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that because I don't really know where I should be. So, you know,
I just think there's been enough now given. Your player on the bench is so excellent of last year and has done nothing wrong. If there's a sense of, you know, you're laughing there, mate. You're giggling. It's just, if there's going to be confusions, well, this is it, isn't it? He's had a few games. He hasn't looked great. Now Ramsdale comes in for a bit.
Yeah, this is how we think dimly. I'm going down another route, as they say in the US. If I'm Chelsea, I'm phoning up and saying I'll take Ramsdale. Give me Ramsdale, my friend. If you're not going to use him, because Ramsdale is the level you're talking about.
They won't let
him
go. Yeah, absolutely. They won't let him go, Rob. I don't think they'll let him go.
Ramsdale's talking about he has to go and play somewhere if he's going to be in the Euros. If Ramsdale starts dropping his lip and they think, oh, is he going to be right for us and whatever, I'm just saying that if he's overlooked by Arteta. Arteta thinks, and I know Arteta wants the two goalkeepers and all that, and we've heard all the reasons behind it.
Never.
If I'm Chelsea right now, I'd go and put it amongst them. I'll take Ramsdale, because I think he's the right level. I think he's the level that you're talking about that Chelsea need.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right, Robert. And that's why, you know, it's like, okay, like, it should be back in the side for me. The only thing I would say, Arsenal, and it's been quite clever, Raya's only on loan, isn't he? I don't think it's an obligation to buy.
Yeah.
So it could be like his experiment. And Mikel Arteta might have already said to Aaron Ramsdale, like, listen, this is going to be a year. Let's see. Let's see, you know, how it shakes out. Because it could be number one again pretty quickly. They might not sign David Raya on the back of a season that wasn't as good as they thought he was going to be. I would just say, I can't think it's many more games, Rob, before the manager's like, okay, we have another great
guy. Based on what he said, if not, I think you lose Ramsdale after that. I think Ramsdale's sort of been okay, you know, I'll give it that time. Yeah. And then you see a couple of things and nothing happens. And I think it changes the dynamic a little bit. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one for Mikel Arteta to manage his way through. Another one I just want to go to, and again, I think I've talked about him and the influence. Declan Rice, my friend, who possibly could have ended up at Chelsea with, you know, was there as a kid, got let go, you know, maybe got outpriced in terms of money. But when you think of Enzo, Caicedo and Rice, I think it's three of the highest ever paid Premier League transfers playing in the midfield. Declan Rice, my friend, has bought a drive and a maturity. And I know he's still 24 or something, but played an incredible amount of games and rarely is injured. That's going to be important to Arsenal going for the challenge of the title this season. Brings they're in a better place with him. There's a mentality about him that I love. The way he took the goal, the way that he drives on. I talked about him a couple of weeks ago against Man City. Him in front of him in that midfield makes them so much better. Just makes them more. I'm not sure what the word is, but something that. Bring what you want to bring. We've got Declan Rice and he'll deal. Odegaard's a beautiful player, lovely feet, great vision, you know, passes the ball. Jorginho, if he's playing or it's Partey or whoever, you know, have their strengths. Declan Rice has almost like a belief in himself and what he's doing in the group. I think he's such a big influence on that group after a short space of time. And if he can stay fit, which is going to be important. He's going to have a big say in what happens at this for Arsenal this season.
Don't disagree with you, but first half, didn't think he played well.
No.
He played as a left-sided number eight.
He actually said in his interview, like his first 5-10 minutes of the games were terrible. He couldn't get himself into it. And I don't think that's right. But great players don't always play great, but great players find a way of getting back in the game, of affecting the game, of getting a goal, of assisting somebody or helping somebody out. I just feel like he almost looks like he's 28, 29. He's been in the game, you know.
I know.
He's still a young man, but he just carries something about him Rob, that I think Arsenal have lacked in the past that fulfills them in a different way than they've got.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And that's why we both agree it was a brilliant sign-in. There's a lot of money, but my point is, Rob, it's still that midfield three for Arsenal. It still isn't right.
The balance isn't right.
Kai Havertz was meant to be the player to play the left-sided number eight.
Correct.
And he hasn't worked out. So now Declan Rice, who's so good at different roles in midfield, he can do that. And he's been playing that. But then you've got Jorginho holding, which isn't the answer. Odegaard, I thought, was a little quiet. So where I kind of like the Chelsea midfield three right now, the Arsenal three, and it was Jorginho, Odegaard and Rice, it still don't quite feel right. Now, it might be Thomas Partey that comes to play the holding player where Jorginho is and Rice is on that left-hand side. I still love so much, though, Declan Rice's ability to defend from a central number six position, centrally protecting more than being sometimes up the field, out of the game defensively.
Because
and now he can do that. Anyway, we go on a bit. Like, my point is, a midfield three, and I think that's what has quite for Arsenal, and they're still trying to find that slick rhythm that we saw, Rob, as the start of last year when we went over
it doesn't quite
the UK.
Been the same football.
We saw them in the flesh from 20 yards away, and I was like, wow, they still haven't quite done it. I mean, fair play, great character. They come back, and Saka puts a brilliant ball in for Trossard, who I just really like Trossard, Rob. I'd sooner have him in the side than, well, I guess when you've got Martinez, Jesus and Saka, that probably is your front three. But I've got to say, I would at times play Trossard instead of Jesus up front, but I think Trossard's got more creative production of him than Jesus. So that's just my personal take on that. But anyway, just to sum this one up, Rob, we talked a lot about this one. Good signs for Chelsea. Finding a identity, and Arsenal still haven't found it. Unbeaten, like they're unbeaten. No, they've been unbeaten for a while.
Yeah, unbeaten.
Now.
Yeah.
But still quite find their top mojo and their slick best football. But now maybe Mo's come back to full fitness. Maybe we'll start to see it. But no, good game by the way. Good game, proper game. 2-2. Really enjoyed it.
Okay, my friend, let's move it on to the Merseyside Derby, the first game of the weekend. It was the early kickoff. Obviously, not one that Jurgen Klopp ever likes to play the early kickoffs, especially after the internationals when he's had players away. But Everton, I think we always knew what Everton were going to be. Difficult to play against. We're going to make it hard for Liverpool to have good possession, to play their flowing football, especially at Anfield. Incident-packed game, my friend. Incident-packed game. I think it was one of those where, you know, if you just sort of said you didn't see the game but said, oh, Liverpool won 2-0, you'd probably think, pretty routine. They maybe got a goal first off. Arsenal, like Everton, defended quite well, and then they found a way to get second. But I didn't think it was that routine, I've got to be honest. I didn't think it was a routine 2-0 win. Mm-hmm. And again, mate, we have to go to some refereeing incidents that shaped the game. Do you want to start?
Go on, then. You talk us through those incidents.
Let me talk you about what I saw as three big controversial incidents around the game. Well, Ashley Young, 2 yellow cards, sending off. I don't have too much argument with either of them, I've got to be honest. I don't think Sean Dyche, in fairness, did. A little surprised Ashley Young ends up going to ground and allowing the contact, if that's what we'll say. But 2 yellow cards, she goes off. Okay. We then have Ibrahim Konaté is on a yellow card, then runs across the line of Beto. There's contact. Beto goes down. He's on a yellow card. It looks intense and purposes like it's a foul, which was given. No yellow card. Konaté is allowed to stay on the pitch. Minutes later, by the way, Jurgen Klopp drags him off because he realises, wow, we've got away with one here. And then from there, Liverpool go on and get a penalty kick courtesy of a Michael Keane handball that I think was a handball. Yeah. So I'll go back to the Konaté one, which Everton and Sean Dyche certainly, and I can understand exactly why he's asking the question. How is one player in a blue gets 2 yellow cards for 2 fouls, and a player in red gets 1 yellow card for 2 fouls, and is allowed to stay on the pitch and get substituted, and in the end, Liverpool go on to win the game?
No, I kind of agree with your intimating there, Rob. Very, very lucky. I don't, you know, it looked like, well, a foul like that, when he's not really attempting to play the ball, it is unsporting behaviour to stop him going by. Now, some might argue, and I can't remember his comment now, you know, it wasn't a lot of contact, but I think when you saw from the reverse angle, the gym, when you look at it, it's like he's just done enough to
grab him to stop him on
a potential breakaway, which is, you know, the laws sort of say, you know, if there's a transition or a potential attack, if you stop that deliberately, then it's a yellow card. Yeah. I thought it was very, very lucky, Rob. Very, very lucky. And on the same point, really, Rob. And again, I have no problem with the Ashley Youngs. It seems now, mate, that the yellow cards are so easy to get. You know, and I know that they've clamped down on kicking the ball away or surrounding referees. It just seems that the difference between a foul and a yellow card is hardly anything. And then players get on one yellow card, there's another foul, and then people are like, well, that was just like the other one. I'm seeing every game pretty much, Rob, where I'm like, who's going to get sent off for 2 yellows? I think we've seen, again, I don't know what the data and the numbers are on this. It's just, I'm not a fan of the foul. Seemingly every foul is almost a yellow card, and you're going to get 2 of them in a game. And there's so many players that are sent out. They have a game suspension based on tiny mistiming tackles. Gosh, there's been so many, Rob. And I just thought this weekend, 2 things I thought, Rob. I thought, well, 3 things. The handball stuff, again, continued to be difficult to read. The escalation in yellow cards. And also, Rob, again, you know, and I apologise for going on about this a little bit, for VAR. I feel like every challenge in the game, the referee's like that. Hold on, checking that, checking for this, checking for outside the box, checking for potential red card, checking for a handball. And the commentator's like, where? What was that? It's like that. Please use VAR less. It's only there for howling, awful, stand up off your couch errors that everybody sees. And yet it seems to be used, Rob, in a refereeing sense more than I've ever seen it done before since its introduction 4 or 5 years ago now, where it's like the referees are so scared, I think. It's like, stop, let's just check that. Let's just don't re-referee it. Please referee the game. And it's there to stop any terrible errors. And that's all I'm going to say about blimmin' refereeing VR for this podcast, Rob. But I just feel there's a couple of things. I just thought, wow, these yellow cards all the time. We want to see a game of 10 against 10.
Yeah.
You know, for players not doing much wrong. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. One player, again, who I've mentioned a couple of times this season, and I just think, again, he deserves another mention, is Mo Salah, my friend, who comes up with the goals, one from a penalty, one from a quick breakaway, Darwin Núñez, pace, exploited Everton, obviously pushing on and down to 10 men, trying to maybe get something from the game. But I think 7 goals, 4 assists now in 9 Premier League games for Salah. It's 104 goals I saw somewhere stat that he scored at Anfield, as many as Kenny Dalglish and Steven Gerrard. You know, the player that, you know, let's go back a few months, Rob, there was talk that he might not be at the football club, that he was going to go to the Saudi League and they were going to lose him and how would they replace him. His numbers for a team that are going to challenge or look to challenge for a title are irreplaceable right now. And I was thinking that Arsenal haven't got one at the moment. Chelsea haven't got one at the moment. Man United haven't got one at the moment. All right, they bought a young kid who they hope will be here. Spurs haven't got one at the moment because now they've let Harry Kane go. That player who's going to get you enough, the goals to win you a title, Liverpool have got. And he's a blessing. He's an absolute blessing. Well, he didn't particularly play that well. I didn't think. I thought Mikalenko did a pretty good job on him for most of the game. But he has the confidence when the penalty comes. He clips one over Pickford when the second one comes. He takes his goal tally on. He takes his assists on. He just keeps delivering. I just think he's another who sometimes, you know, his numbers are incredible. And we sometimes just brush over, oh, 2 more Salah goals. Okay, let's move on. I mean, what this guy does on a regular basis is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, there's a point in the second half, Rob, where Liverpool were piling on, trying to get the through goal. All 5 of those forwards are on the field. I think one of them was playing left wing back. I mean, it might have been Luis Diaz.
He took off Simikas, didn't he, and played him
on the left. Yeah, like all those 5 forwards on there found a way. I mean, back to Everton, I thought they looked really, really solid.
Yeah.
You know, and they
exactly one
at the start. Really strong, really good defensively. Michael Keane, his hand is quite away from his body there to give that one away. And it always seems to happen to Michael Keane, you know, own goal or stands on the ball or, you know, it's just unfortunate that way. But fair play. Liverpool, I'll tell you what's interesting, Robin. This sort of you picked up on it because it's the sort of thing that you look for a lot. Jurgen Klopp after the game, you know, we know at Anfield he always does the bangs his chest and he fist pumps. There was a lot of it. There was a lot of it afterwards, more than I've almost ever seen. Is he, and I'll throw it as a question to you, is he revving up the fan base to say, listen, we're in it. We can do it this year. We can win the title. Start to believe it. Let's get it going. I felt like he was really revving up the fans to try and build a real big head of steam.
It's really interesting you said that because I've got a note here. And again, one of the things somebody talked about was the atmosphere because, you know, they're redoing one of the stadiums at the moment. Yeah. So the capacity is a bit down. So maybe there's not quite as much noise. Not sure if it's home or away fans or combination. It's not there. But there's something that I wrote down, Robin, and it was kind of part of that Klopp thing and part of the game as a whole. And he even, you know, he came out after and in fairness was honest enough to say he thought Konate could have gone. He thought they were a bit lucky. But I've wrote a note where I've said there's still part of me that feels Liverpool are convincing themselves that the title contends as much as they're convincing us. It still feels like there's 2 or 3 good wins or 2 or 3 real top performances that are going to go, they're in it, or are Liverpool really in it? I still feel it's like in the balance. And it's interesting that you picked up on Klopp. I think he's trying to ignite the fans, to ignite the players, to ignite the football club. When they were chasing City, you felt it, didn't you? We went to the training ground and you felt that they were, you know, they felt that they were going to win the title the year they did it. I remember we saw them in pre-season and Jordan Henderson was like, I couldn't believe how positive he was. And yeah, we're going for it this year. And I just don't feel they're quite in that spot at the moment. And maybe that's where Klopp, you know, is great at, you know, the fist pump, the emotional stuff, the, you know, connecting with the fans. I just feel maybe that's where they are right now.
Yeah, like Robbie's trying to hug him there. You know, come on, you know, we need you. We need you to try and get to there. The one thing that's interesting, Rob, watching, you know, the lineup, of course, before the the game kicked off, is Szoboszlai, McAllister and Gravenberch all started the game in midfield. Yeah. And I feel like if Ryan Gravenberch is the real deal and he's ready to be the real deal at this in this team, at this club, which is very difficult to, then I think it's on. I honestly think it's on.
Does McAllister play as your six, though, Rob? So you'd have
to. Well, I think so. Again, McAllister, that's not his best position. Again, there's times where he just... I mean, his passing range is brilliant, but it's still a few times he gets caught on the ball a little bit inoffensive. So I don't know. I mean, like I hear you. And I think my biggest concern would still be defensively. It still is. And I know Trent moves into midfield. We've put on Szoboszlai and all that. Yeah. And that works quite nicely. I still... You know, Konate, you know, I guess if I know what I'm getting out of most of those players. Gravenberch in midfield, don't know. Konate, I think I know what I'm going to get out of him. And it's really important. He's on the right side to cover for Trent when he moves inside. Key player. Key player. I feel like Konate is for the team. See what they can do. They're going to miss Robertson, Rob. You know, to your point of, are they really ready to have a title tilt? He's such a good player, Robertson, in so many different ways. They're going to be messed with. He's done his shoulder. He's going to be out for many, many weeks, I believe. Again, the goals and the creative part, no problem. Szoboszlai, even though he's been away, captain in Hungary, he's still running like into the game. So, yeah, good win for them, but it wasn't easy. You're right. And Everton, I'll tell you, they made it very difficult, really good shape. But
Anan Doucouré, I thought, Rob, for Anan, I thought putting it a performance, I like him. I think he's a footballer in there some ways, sometimes a little bit loose and, you know, fouls and whatever, but I like him. And Doucouré continues to be, you know, a really important part of what they do. So felt a little bit for Everton and Sean Dyche because he's done his work. He's set his team up. He knows what they've got to do. To a certain degree, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin does better with that first header that comes in the box early in the game. It might look a bit
And they
different.
Get the red card, Rob. You know, and another game, they get the red card.
And then all of a sudden with 10v10, and it looks and maybe feels very different. But Liverpool got the win, and they got a bit of luck, maybe. They didn't get it at Tottenham recently. Get the 2 points and keep them up there with the rest of the front runners.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay, let's move it to a team who moved to the top of the table with a 2-1 win against Brighton. Playing against Brighton's never a particularly easy game anymore with Zerbi and his setup. And it's interesting, Rob, before the in his pre-match press conference before the game, Pep had even talked about De Zerbi being the next Man City manager. We know with Pep, he likes throwing out all the compliments and then beating you, just to prove a point. But I have to say, I was keeping an eye on this game, doing one or two things, but it almost looked to me as though City were a little bit back to the City we've expected over the last few years. Good football, plenty of chances, getting to those areas that behind the back line and causing problems, pulling the ball back and a threat going forward with the front players.
Yeah, I just thought they were at it. Just high energy, just really, really sharp from the beginning. Totally dominated the first half. And when they go 2-0 up, Rob, Alvarez and Haaland score goals. Yeah. I'm thinking, wow, this could be another bit of a tonking for Brighton. The second half, Brighton do what they do, and the manager's what he does, and he's so all out attacking football. I'm still finding it fascinating to see how he goes. Other teams that took down after 20 minutes, Rob, away at Man City, are fearing the worst. In this game, Man City are almost holding on at the end to get the three points because Brighton find a way to get back in, and they keep trying to play their way, and they seem to get opportunities. I mean, playing Solly Marsh at left back, it looks like he's got a bad injury, by the way, which is a real blow for a player that's in the form of his career. Playing him at left back, and then he's got attacking players throughout midfield and up front. He absolutely goes for it, De Zerbi, wherever he is. And even when he goes 2-0, but 2-0 down, Rob, there's no sense of being pragmatic at all. There's not a pragmatic bone in his body. It's all about, we'll find a way, we'll get our passing going. And they did. In the second half, they get the goal. Ansu Fati scores. And then City, you know, Pep's making defensive substitutions. Two defenders come on late, I think it was. And Brighton worried them right to the end. So I thought it was a game where both teams in some ways come out with credit. I mean, I still find it difficult to predict the Brighton lineup. And it, God, there's some good players on the bench. And like, why?
Well, we had Welbeck, and Welbeck got injured, didn't he, early? And Ferguson had to come on 40 minutes into the game, which, you know, affects things as well, because obviously they're a different profile. But yeah, he's going to play his football, he's going to play his way, and that's why every now and then we see a bit of a freak result against Brighton, because maybe when it doesn't work, it all doesn't work one day. But he moves on, he has his confidence in what he does and how he does it, and he's not one of them managers who's ever going to ask him to play long and don't take chances in there. He's going to believe in what he does, and I think because of that, the players believe. And yeah, it could have been, you wouldn't have been that surprised if Brighton had found a way to get a 2-2 draw. One player who caught my eye, Rob, who, it's kind of unfair that City is so good and then this guy's come in, and the biggest credit I can give him is he's almost bought another option. It's Jeremy Doku. Left-hand side. Now, I know he was playing against James Milne, who's maybe struggling towards the end of his career. He struggled, certainly in a right-back role with somebody as raw pace, skill and ability as Doku. But he reminds me a little bit of what Sane gave him when he first came to the club, Rob. That ability with his pace to run in and out, but can get to that byline and cut balls back. And we know with City, if and when they get there, there's going to be good options in the box, quality players in the box who can one touch, who can manipulate the ball, who can bend it in if it comes across. And I just thought for the first 45 minutes, I thought he was outstanding. He's going to be a real asset to City and a real threat to Grealish, who's a different type and maybe in a different game brings a different quality. But just his raw pace and that ability to go in off on his right or outside on his left with a forward line that's got Alvarez and Hoyland and De Bruyne to come and Silva and all the rest, Foden, is a bit frightening, to be honest.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, Rob. Jack Grealish, who was one of Pep's first picks last season, left-hand side, he's out right now. And I don't know whether I'm jumping the mark a little bit here or overstepping the mark a little bit. Wonder if his attitude hasn't quite been to Pep's liking, Rob. The big celebrations and stuff.
I tend to sense that Pep doesn't mind him being Jack the Lad, if you use a pun, that he likes a bit of personality and character. As long as you're doing your work,
maybe he's not doing the work there, Rob. Maybe that might be affecting his work and training. Pep's all about training. How his players train, that is how he picks his team. And at the moment, Doku, as you said, is a great threat on the left-hand side. You've got Foden playing on the right side, the other. Alvarez and Silva playing in those eight positions. I mean, she was huge.
There's a lot of football as well, Rob. They play young boys, don't they, this week in the Champions League. You know, it's whether he might drop him straight back into that one. And you know, obviously, they've got the Manchester Derby coming up next weekend. So, with one thought on that, there's probably plenty of football and whatever. But it is interesting. You know, he was the darling, wasn't he, Jack, to the end of last season as they won. And I think it's very much Pep as well that, you know, you've got to earn the right, haven't you? You talk about Calvin Phillips now, who I think is getting the reckoning that this ain't for him at the moment. This ain't going to look like he's going to get a place and might have to move on. Interesting that with both Rodri back, but John Stones back as well, mate. John Stones, I was watching the game. Sometimes he ends up at left wing or centre forward. It's incredible that the kind of change in the freedom with which Pep and the respect that he gives him now in terms of playing and overloading in areas where you know, we've normally seen him just sitting at the back and making sure things are tight.
It's probably my favourite City version, Rob, because this is when Stones plays centre-back and in midfield. So, you know, when the full-backs go in there, they call it the inverted full-back. I'm not sure whether there's a name yet for an inverted centre-back or what. I don't know what the trendy name is yet, but he goes into midfield from centre-back. And we've seen that from City. We've seen Akanji that before. And I kind of like it. It's kind of simpler from centre-back. Yeah. They have the build-up play and he goes into midfield. And then you've got a back three of Walker. It was Akanji and Gvardiol that I like. I mean, three proper defenders and there's others to come in there. Ruben Diaz is to come in there. My favourite versatility when they bring a defender into midfield is from centre-back, whether it's Akanji or Stones. Just on Akanji, Rob, another two yellow card, red card. It's going to hurt them. He's out for the next game. They get a one-game suspension against Manchester United next weekend. But that's a blow for them. Other than that, I thought City were good value in an awkward second half where you might expect to be a few cruise control. They were not, because Brighton have got this, the way of playing. They'll keep going. They'll try and find a way with their football. So it was a good win for them, Rob, given they lost the last two Premier League games, Man City. So good victory. And I thought back to kind of a hungry, fast-paced and pretty attack-minded team. And Haaland's goal with sheer power with his left foot.
I thought there was a bit of frustration and everything in that. Yeah. He got it, wasn't it? Yeah. It was like, bang.
Yeah.
But, good win for City. Go back to the top of the table, which is usually a bit early for them. They don't worry about tables until we get down to April, March, April and May time. But, good win for City ahead of next week's big derby at Old Trafford. Listen, mate, let's get to a few other results. We had a game today. Clarendon Blue derby of Aston Villa at home to West Ham. Two teams in good form came into the game, 6th versus 9th, Villa in 6th, West Ham in 9th. But I think we've appreciated both these managers, both these teams in terms of what they've done. West Ham winning the Conference League trophy last season and having a decent start to the league. Unai Emery just continuing to go strength to strength, even though they're in European competition this time around as well. So expecting this one to be pretty tight, mate. Probably fancy Villa because of their home record. They were on a run of 10 straight home wins in the Premier League. So probably, fancied Villa maybe to nick it. But I didn't see a Villa 4-1 win against West Ham. I've got to be honest.
I just thought it was a great game, Rob. I really enjoyed today. I mean, we have the four game windows yesterday. So we literally sat down for 8 hours watching football.
Really enjoyed the weekend off. Both of us with the weekend off, mate.
Not in studio. But there's so many games, wasn't it? And there's so many notes. And, like, I enjoyed getting up this morning and one game to focus on. And I really enjoy, particularly Villa at the moment, really enjoy what Unai Emery is doing to the team, the way that they play, the way that they build up. You know me, Rob, I love something that's a bit different. And they continue to do something different in midfield where they get between the lines as good as any team in the league. Maybe the best of those McGinn and Zaniolo are getting in the hole. The way that there's some subtle interchanges, position, you've got the
midfield going some to Diaby. Diaby's very clever going in there at times.
Well, he'll swap sometimes with John McGinn. There's a midfield kind of interchange that goes on. So they've got like two or three bits in the team where players change positions. Yeah. And it just frees them up a little bit and it gets their football going really, really well. And I enjoyed West as well. I thought they were super. I mean, we had Lee Dixon commenting on the game and I agreed where they got into their position really strong, great shape. You've got Ward-Prowse doing really good work, Rob, offensively as well now in that area with the other guy, Alvarez, the new signing, the two new signings in midfield. I just thought it was a really good game of football. And Aston Villa Park, you know, if right now, if I could go to a game, Rob, in the Premier League, I think I'd want to go to Villa Park. I think I just want to go there, sit there and watch a team and a club that have been desperate for something, a real good side for a long period of time now. Yeah. I just like the way that they play. I do. And what a job he's done. There were some numbers, Rob. I think this time last year, there were 3 points under Steven Gerrard, points away from the relegation zone with what they've done right now. Best league start for 25 years. They're up to fifth in the league table, Rob. And when we saw them the first weekend of the season, they got smashed, didn't they, at St James's Park?
They still
got a high line. They still play with a high line, but when they put the pressure on correctly in there, that's not a problem. So I really enjoyed the game.
There's no Mings, there's no Buendia, two players who probably in the starting 11, and people are moaning, other teams are moaning about who haven't been there. I think I saw a similar start, Rob, since he's taken over Unai Emery, which was about November the 5th. So we're coming up to virtually a calendar year. Only Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool have got more points than Aston Villa in that period. Yeah. I mean, that shows over a period of time, mate, that the work's been done and it's been shown. And I wrote a couple of notes just on a couple of players. Like I know Douglas Luiz is one of your favourites. I think he scored in six straight Premier League games now at Villa Park.
Home
games. And it's just an example of seeing a player playing at his potential. Because often you see some players who, or some teams, Man United, we could say, have got good players, but they're not playing near their potential. He's got a number of players. You talk of Luiz, Watkins, who we'll talk about, with goals and his assists and his running in behind, his understanding. He's growing under the coach. And there's another guy, Rob, I wanted to mention, actually, who just caught my eye today and I kept seeing him. And he's not one of them who probably gets the headlines. He's not one of them who's the commentators talk about that much. But Boubacar Kamara.
Yeah, good player.
Good player, my friend. More important player than people think in that team.
Yeah.
I know Luiz gets the headlines. He's probably better on the eye, technically maybe a bit stronger and gets forward and gets goal. But the other fella, technically smart, mate. Reads the opposition well. He's a lovely footballer. Got nice balance, left foot, right foot. He's 23 years of age, French international. Stevie G bought him in and he got injured, didn't he, I think, when he first came in the football club and was out for a little while. Stevie G, things didn't go that well for him. That's something he gave him a little bit of a gift in this young man. Because I think he's a proper player in there, mate. And he doesn't really get the credit. We talk about the front guys and Watkins and Diaby and talk about the Consers and the Cashies. And he's one of them who doesn't really get a mention. But I thought he was excellent today. His passing, his continuity, his understanding of his position, if when they do move or they make transitions. I just thought he was one of those that is just another sneaky good under Unai Emery developing his game.
Great shout. He's I don't know whether we've had him as an underappreciated performer, Rob, but he's that type. So it's a great pick out. I think Douglas Luiz, we might have mentioned him last year. He's better than what people think. I think Boubacar Kamara is a great shout because I think there was some real publicity about him over the last few weeks, Rob, about how good a player he is. And he's 3, I think Douglas Luiz is 25. Had McGinn, Zaniolo, who's been pretty good, pretty clever the way he comes inside. Yeah. It's just a good story. And I thought, final shout on this game, Rob, the bench. Yuri Tielemans comes on, makes an assist for Leon Bailey. So they've got good options off the bench, apart from the ones that there's a left back as well. I can't think of his name now, the Villa left back that was bought in by the current regime.
Oh, Moreno.
Moreno. Yeah. He's close to coming back to fitness as well. So you've got a manager. Mm-hmm. You've got that Monchi, the new director of football, who's worked with Unai Emery before, of course, to great success at Sevilla. It's got to be a pretty fun time to be an Aston Villa supporter now. And fair play. Again, it's been tilted to Villa. But again, final point from me on West Ham, I like what they're doing as well. I just thought Antonio was a little disappointed up front for them.
Yeah, he played for Jamaica, didn't he? I think corner of the sea. So I think he's had a bit of travelling and been away. Not that I'm giving him an excuse, but sometimes obviously those are the things. And then both these teams go in Europe, Rob, as well midweek now. So that's the other test. Villa away at Alkmaar and West Ham. I think it's away at Olympiacos. So, challenging and then got to get back to weekend. So after international breaks that maybe in the past, not all the players have gone, everybody virtually is leaving the training ground. You get them back maybe on a Friday, do a little bit of work and then you got to get ready to go again.
Right, mate, let's just wrap up the podcast now. Just anything that kind of, any other business really, I suppose, if you like. I'll run down a few of the results, Rob. We've got Newcastle Crystal Palace nil. You know, Newcastle absolutely flying at the moment. Mm. Goals from different parts of the side. Important goals, I guess, for Wilson, Anthony Gordon. Yeah. Bournemouth 1, Wolves 2. And this is where my little underappreciated performer is going to pop into our show, mate. And it's Gary O'Neill, underappreciated massively at Bournemouth Football Club last year for the job that he did to keep them into the Premier League comfortably at the end of it. I literally spat my tea out on the morning in the summer when I heard that he'd been fired for Bournemouth. And then he jumps over to Wolverhampton Wanderers. He goes to his old place and wins 2-1. They're comfortably out of the relegation zone. We thought, I think I tipped them to go down, actually, Rob, given the turmoil of the manager, Lopetegui, leaving the club and financial fair play issues. What a job he's done at Wolverhampton Wanderers, and really, like, absolutely underappreciated at Bournemouth. Now, things might change, and Iriola might turn things at Bournemouth, but at the moment, they're in the bottom three, looking like they can't find a way to score or to stop goals going in. And Gary O'Neill is proven himself to be a smart, really, I like the way we spoke to him pitch side at Old Trafford. I like him. I like his football teams. I like the way his teams seem very motivated, organised. And what a job he's doing at Wolves. So Gary O'Neill is by far and away my most outstanding, underappreciated performer from this weekend.
It's a great shout, mate. And if you remember, our last game of the season when we were at Goodison Park with Everton, it was Everton v Bournemouth. And remember, we were sitting behind him and we're close up. And I was impressed, Rob, with the way he just dealt with everything. His subs, his staff, he was, you know, and on the day, Everton won and stayed up and whatever. And the last thing you're thinking that he's not going to be in charge of the football club. In between that, we meet him first day of the season at Wolves. His Wolves team played brilliant football, outplayed Manchester United and should have got something from the game, end up losing 1-0. United getting the victory that day. But you're right, it's a really good shout. And I think he's somebody whose stock's rising. I think you're getting to the stage where I saw Dean Smith was at the game at Villa today, and I'm starting to think to myself, Gary O'Neill will probably get a shot at a job before Dean Smith now, a Premier League job.
He's still got a bit to do, Rob, and
I'm not saying he's arrived yet, but I think there's a
trajectory,
and I think there's an understanding. I think these are, you know, people thought that the Bournemouth thing was a bit harsh. Listen, the owner buys a club, he has a right to go in what direction he wants. But I think you can see in Gary O'Neill's teams a style of play, what he's trying to do. It doesn't always work. And, you know, he's gone into Wolves, difficult situation. But he's got them playing pretty handily. And I could see Wolves being 14th, 13th in the table and not being in any relegation.
That'd be really good. Yeah, that'd be really, really good. That'd be really, really good. Last couple of Nottingham Forest 2, Luton Town 2, Burnley 0. So Brentford's found some form and you know, they get forwards without Ivan Toney, and Burma scored and Wister scored as well. A great goal from Mbeumo, wasn't it? The shot from the distance.
Benjamin, lovely.
So Brentford maybe found a form, good moment in time. So that wraps up a very enjoyable, as ever, Premier League weekend.
Yeah. On a weekend, when we lost Bobby Charlton, you know, a legend of English football, it was a day when Manchester United just had to win at Bramall Lane to mark the passing of the great man. We'll be back next week, which is match week 10. That includes the little matter of a Manchester derby at Old Trafford, where United host Manchester City. That's on Sunday. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.